This podcast was made possible by an anonymous Irvingtonian and by our primary sponsor, Artisan Realtors, your Irvington real estate source.
Welcome to another edition of Firehouse Irvington, once again live in a very familiar location for us, Coal Yard Coffee, and we really do appreciate Coal Yard Coffee for allowing us in on a very rainy Saturday here in central Indiana. Our main sponsor, Artisan Realtors, celebrating its 10th anniversary here in Irvington. If you're considering buying or selling a home, let one of our artisans craft a great buying or selling experience for you, conveniently located at 5610 East Washington Street between The Legend and Ossip. And this is a show about connections. We've always talked that Irvington is more of a state of mind than a geographical location. And where Firehouse Irvington comes in, as we've always said, every community has a firehouse, active or inactive, and we thought, wouldn't it be great if there was a little tiny radio station in every one of those firehouses so people can connect? In fact, in the past, people had radio stations, and prior to social media, people actually talked. So that's what's kind of cool about this show, is we're talking to people, we're talking about the connections, and we have found, initially, when we started doing this, we did this because we loved Irvington, but we found out that the Irvington well goes very deep. There's so many things about Irvington. It's an absolute magical community. And part of, I think, a very important part of the history of Irvington is the fact that there were always great, quirky businesses. And there was a restaurant that, frankly, if it hadn't opened, I think part of the charm of Irvington wouldn't have kick-started the way it did, and that restaurant was called DuFours, and we have the DuFours sisters here.
La-la.
Bernadette. Go ahead and say hi, Bernadette.
Hi, Bernadette.
See, that was perfect. I was hoping that you would.
Did I follow the...
Absolutely.
Catholic school background. Do
See?
What you said. Do
Absolutely.
What you're told.
Absolutely. And Marie. Is it Maria?
Yes.
Okay. But did you go by Marie or... Lefty or any names like that?
Dago.
Oh, okay, sure. Whatever. I mean, you know, we can't, you know, remember this is mostly radio, so. But we're glad that you guys are here. And now, DuFours as a restaurant is no longer open. Is that accurate?
Correct.
Okay, so mm-hmm. You guys have, you're off to doing other pursuits now.
Oh, we are.
But when was DuFours open?
Originally, it started as a small coffee shop behind the original Jack and Jill building in the historic strip of Washington on the north side. That's a historic, that strip that's owned by one gentleman. So from Audubon to Lehman. So we were originally, the Jack and Jill opened in the middle of the block. She was searching for somebody to do a little coffee shop. And I had just moved back to Indianapolis. Maria was hanging loose. We kind of talked about it. And we went into 98 square feet in the back of Jack and Jill's shop. And Maria was, she was out of culinary art school and had her degree and everything. So we had a commissioned kitchen on the north side. And Maria would, I would do the business end and she did the other end. So we did coffees and all homemade, all from special recipes that we had or found. So Maria did that. We did the business. We put it in 98 square feet behind Jack and Jill's.
So even though it
store.
Was sort of the size of like a walk-in closet, you guys figured out a way
yes.
using another kitchen to sort of bring in the good
yes.
stuff.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah, we did. Yeah.
Yeah. And so Maria was like, she had probably a little more, obviously, from the point of view of having to go back and forth between the kitchen and all that. But they would start popping their head in the back door because we had no front door on Washington Street. Everybody came in from the parking lot, okay. which was the back door. And they'd pop in and say, do you do lunch? I go, no. And so that kind of like, that was mentioned with the idea of like, well, maybe we could do soup. We took on another 98 square feet. Ta-da! And we had this bigger little place. So then we started doing, Maria would do soups and breads and the desserts and coffees. And we were there about a year when a new landlord had taken over and came in. It was actually the day of the Halloween festival, so it was the end of October of 97. Walked in and said, hey, I got this corner that I'm probably going to close them down. And I said, are you talking to us? And he goes, yeah, we can. So Maria exited at that time. She decided to go on. So I moved down there and in 3 months, renovated what was an old hardware store, falling ceilings and rotted floors into a restaurant. And then we had another sister, her name is Diane, and she came in and worked in the back of the house and ran the back of the house for me and direction in the kitchen. And then we started building the restaurant from there.
Yeah. Did part of this on the fly.
Right, and so many things, I just believe in a higher power, and so many things just kept coming together where we needed something done and somebody surfaced. You know, I had a subcontractor that was, in fact, Jack Lashbrook of the Antique Mall, Jack and Jill Antique Mall, he came in the back door and there was an argument going on in the front of the house, and he said, what's going on? And I said, my contractor is now firing the subcontractor and I'm not sure what to do. We're in the middle of trying to get this finished and I'm not going to write any more checks. We need to open. And Jack goes, what do you need? Jack stepped in and he finished up in 2 weeks for me.
Oh, that's the kind of person Jack Lashbrook is.
So it always provided.
Moving into that historical building was very fortuitous for you because I'd always felt like if you guys' business hadn't been there, so many people love to develop, and I understand developing, and I understand, you know, there's no community on the planet that would say, well, no, we don't need a really nice pharmacy with a really big parking lot, but those kinds of big box retailers take up space, and much of the quaintness then goes away. So I always felt like if you guys weren't there, being sort of one of the solid anchors for the number of years that you were there, that it just wouldn't be the same.
I eventually moved on. I lost a husband and remarried, and then our joke is, and we do have a book called DeFores in Irvington, Blessings in Our Soup, and it's memoirs and recipes from our days there.
Oh, good. So it has some stories in
It's basically a lot of history of our family. It builds up. We divided it into, we came up with my story, her story, like Big Sis's story, and then how I had it, and then how she came back in, Maria came back into it, so she tells her story, how we the business grew and what those recipes were with stories that we added as we built and our needs and how we added all that. So every recipe for the most part has a story, and in some cases it doesn't, and we go, this one doesn't have a story, you know, it's a recipe.
Yeah, not everything can have a story.
So Maria came in and she had it, and she made the call to go out on a good note. So she brought it up a bunch after I left. I had about 14 years, and then Maria stepped in, and she did her thing and brought it up to a really neat par and more hours. And
it's so good that you did that.
Cussing.
Oh, yeah. Well, we'll get to that part here in a second.
The pots and pans flying in the kitchen.
Yeah. Most places in Irvington famously didn't have alcohol, though ironically the shopkeepers all used alcohol. So it's just one of the little ironies of Irvington.
Yeah.
But I really do have to say, and this is a zero exaggeration, but for those who know Central Indiana, one of the more coveted places to eat that has since gone by was the Ayers Tea Room downtown. But I always felt, too, that DeFores was another place that you sort of had to go to. It was on par with the Tea Room. So did you, Maria, you know, you put a lot of sweat and tears into this. Did you get some feedback from people talking about, hey, we knew we had to come here and eat?
Well, you know, you have a lot of women that would come in and they'd have like a girls' day out and they'd start there at DeFores for lunch, and they always had a really good feel when they would walk in, whether it was Bernadette's watch or my watch, you know. And but quite often it was, you know, I think back when we first started at Jack and Jill's, it was, you want to make a tea room?
You want to make a tea room?
The conversation started way back in 1997 when we first started behind Jack and Jill's, and then it just kind of evolved from what it was, and the book talks about that. The book talks about the evolvement of it, but always people that supported us were always just like, this is so unique. And I would look around and go, oh, it's just all falling down around me. I need so much help,
sure.
You know, but at the same time, that's not what the people saw, you know.
Well, and nobody ever
plus the food, you know.
Yeah, and you never get into something that becomes a tradition based on anything other than almost this whimsy of, I wonder what we could do. Rarely do people start out, maybe a large corporation like the Disney Corporation probably starts out and goes, hey, this is going to be huge from day one. But you guys kind of didn't know what would happen. And Irvington, you know, is so changeable. It's the kind of landscape where some people could take a look and go, hey, I don't understand this community. I'm not going to try to run a business or make connections here. There's other people that go, no, there's an undeniable connection in Irvington, and a sincere business is going to attract people, whether you're selling phonograph records or a great lunch. And mm-hmm. So that's where I think you guys really benefited from those connections.
I yeah. think Marie and I both compared notes on this, and that we realized that a big part of was we try to give them the best, unique, something different, fresh, casual menu, and the other part was is that we presented ourselves to our customers. When I started, I was actually up front. I had a whole setup up front, and then Maria moved in. She was, you know, seeing the growth, and so she decided to put everything in the kitchen. So everything came to me up front, and I was pretty much a one-man show. But as it continued to grow, it was getting difficult. So I had the opportunity to go out and say, hey, we've seen you a few times. What's your name? So Maria got to the point where she realized that, you know, she was in the back and she was kind of not seeing that. And she said she realized it was. And people love that, to be called by name. Mm-hmm. And that was the big thing that we did learn between us, that by going out and giving some of ourselves to the customer and getting to know them and go, how's your mom? You know, that kind of made us stand apart in some ways. I mean, we're not real big about tooting our own horns, but.
No, I mean, it is important to make those connections. Now, with you, with having a culinary background, most people that I know that went to culinary school, and I've flirted with the restaurant world, it's a horrible story. No one wants to hear about it. There was a lot of burned fingers and cuss words, but all that aside.
Welcome to our world.
Yeah, in the culinary world, though, sometimes you feel like you have that calling. So did you come back and say, yeah, I'm going to open this cool, quaint little restaurant on Washington Street? Or did you say, oh, no, I'm going to work at the Cordon Bleu in Paris, France? I mean, did you have huge aspirations? Or did you just say, hey, I'm a Hoosier. I'm going on Washington Street.
I said, hell no.
Beep. You had a more mundane culinary school experience.
Let me tell you how it really got started, okay? Before that comes to me,
says, it's in the book.
Are you doing? And I said, well, I don't know. What are you doing? And she had just met Jack, or she had met Jill. And Jill was like, there's nothing to eat up here. And so, you know, we batted it around, talked about it, and so I became the sweat equity, and she, of course, had a, you know, a little bit more money than I did at that time coming out of school and whatnot, but you know what, in culinary school, they always, you know, talked about if you have your own business, but I never thought that route. I never did until the opportunity, you know, and I'm kind of a roll-up-my-sleeves kind of gal, and you know, I'm here, so let's make the best out of it. And that's what I did that first year, mm-hmm. you know. But money was tight, you know, owning your own business. And I was a single gal, and so I had to make some decisions. And I think I needed more experience, too. You know, it's not easy running your own restaurant at all. I loved being my own boss.
Sure.
She was always bossy, but that's okay.
Well, and I think the restaurant business is particularly difficult, isn't it? Just because you have to sort of get a toehold, then you have to get regular customers, and then you have to actually have the experience that people are seeking out of somebody who may want to access your restaurant. And plus, too, I don't know necessarily how restaurants connected sort of pre-social media, because now it's Yelp reviews or someone
we don't talk
doing
about
their
those.
Own Facebook.
Those are not nice.
Yeah, social media really took off, I think, when I took over the restaurant. In fact, it had already begun when Bernadette still had it. But when I took over in 2010, I got on Facebook and I created, you know, redid the website page and just kind of saw the opportunity that we need to get into the, you know, .com era, you know.
Right.
And so, yeah, so prior to that, it had to be word of mouth. And, you know, when Bernadette decided that this is what she wanted to do with Jill and Jack's encouragement as well, you know, Irvington was really, I mean, it was just dilapidated, you know. And there are some spots yet today that, you know, you see people, you know, say, I wish we could have this and that, you know. And it just takes time. But, yeah, because before DuFour's got there, Jack and Jill had already saw the vision. A gal named Jennifer had Annie's Resale Clothing Store. She was there for 20 years,
I think. Yeah.
And Annie's was, like, right next door, like, would be where
Giacomo's.
Right, where Giacomo's is. Where
one
the
of the extensions of
but, so, yeah, so there were other visionaries there, too, as well. Now, if you asked Annie, or Jennifer was her name, she'd say, oh, hell, I just wanted a cheap rent, you know. And it was very affordable back then, you know. But as things grow and things change, and we've seen Irvington evolve into what it is today, and a lot is, you know, a lot of places are destination places now, mm-hmm. like Giacomo's, and I think people love the legend. And I was always excited when someone would say, I come from
Carmel.
I come from Saturday. Fishers. And I go, what?
Right. I know.
I'm not so sure that I would do that on a Saturday morning.
Right.
You know, but they go, honey, you have no idea how good your food is, do you? And I went, I guess not, you know, because just.
You're so buried in it. You know, and you don't often see the big picture. And all you're thinking is, like she said, in the book I mentioned that I did this thing when we went to breakfast, when we moved from the small one, then we had the breakfast time. So we go, like, how are we going to do breakfast? So you start from scratch, like, okay, how do I build a breakfast menu? And do I open at 6 or do I open at 7? And so part of the story is we had Saturdays, which are just booming because everybody's available. So we did a thing called five for $5. And we had, like, a list this long. And in the book I said, talk about swearing, I go, I didn't know I could cuss until we started this menu thing. And you've got all these orders lined up. You're going, what is this? You know, so it's all, but it's amazing how people said we love this. And I remember, just going over and over in my mind about, oh, God, I got to put this up to $5.50. Are they going to accept it? Five for $5.50? You know, so they didn't bat an eyelash. But it's just those things you get so buried in. What's going on with the staff? Is the food coming out right? I think if you really, really care. And the biggest thing with us was that was our name on the window.
Right.
That was our family name. We had.
Which means from the oven in French, by the way. Dufois is
from the oven.
Technically or literally of the oven.
So, you know, I mean, we were kind of born into it, I guess. And you asked if our parents got us started in that restaurant, but we talk about it in the book, but our dad was in the restaurant supply business for years. He started in Chicago, and eventually they moved here to Indianapolis and worked for different, like, National China and all these different. So he sold all
so
the small wares.
So he certainly knew of
design kitchens.
He's designer.
And certainly knew everything you might need.
Oh.
So.
Well, he had passed. He was passed.
Yeah,
he had already passed at that point, but the story surfaced that years ago, there's 10 of us kids, and lived on North Audubon Circle, right across from the Methodist Church, 53 North Audubon. And Mom, we found out many years later, had always had a desire to open a little place right in that same strip. And Dad would say, no, you got your hands full. No, you got your hands full. Some way, that's what we gave back, then not knowing kind of till later that we gave him a legacy, that we put the name on it. And someone asked me once, why your maiden name and not your married name? And I go, one, that wouldn't sound so good. The other was, I said, you have 9 siblings. That's name recognition.
Oh, sure.
And I don't know how many times people came in and they would say, are you related to, is your sister, is your brother? There's 7 girls and 3 boys. So I'd always write it down, stick it in my pocket, email people later and go, hey, so-and-so came in. So it was like name recognition. It was just, okay, I think we know this family.
And you guys were sort of Irvington brats out of the box anyway, right?
Oh, yeah. So you went to Lourdes, you went to Cecina. So, you know, it was...
We walked them streets and them alleys.
And there is something about this neighborhood that is captivating. I'm sure you guys have to be pleased from being here as long as you have that it... The more things change, the more things stay the same with Irvington, which is a part that I just love.
I love
driving down the streets and seeing the same exact houses.
Yeah.
My parents grew up on Julian. So they were, you know, and they were Howe advocates and everything. That's been a very enjoyable thing for me doing this podcast is meeting then, you know, the people that, you know, Lloyd Knight over at Howe and, you know, hey, let me show you around the school. And so it's been a blast for me. And it's so cool meeting you guys. And, you know, you guys stumbled onto something as you found out before social media got gigantic. Breakfast became like this really important restaurant meal. Do you remember that? That there was a sort of a sensation of like, hey, there's a little place in Louisville or there's a place in Nashville or there's a place here or a place here that you have to go to for breakfast. So I think that that was cool that you guys early on caught on, oh, no, there's going to be people that are going to come from all over just to have breakfast here on Saturdays and Sundays.
Yeah, and then Maria was, she was the give her credit for the Sundays because we were closed Sundays and Mondays originally. I had only done.
If you're going to do breakfast, you got to do Sunday breakfast.
And she found that out, and she was plowed over.
That's the only advice I could have ever given you.
Yeah.
Everything else you would have. You would have been way ahead of me.
I think there was enough turnover that because I thought, do I open on Sunday? Do I open on Monday? But there was a good enough turnover, and everything was happening better in Irvington. The draw was better, so she did the right thing because I don't know how many people later would say, oh, I love going to Maria's. I love going to your place. You know, your sister's great. She has the best Sunday menu and brunch. And I said, great. You know, we didn't go near it because we heard how busy it was. I go, I'm not going over there and having to wait. So, but no, I was so proud of her because, I mean, she did some really nice, innovative things. And I always said she took it up a couple more notches. And when we, you know, she talked to him about closing. And I said, then go out on a high note. Just go out on a high note. And it's not like any talk going on like, oh, this happened and this happened and they couldn't make it. Lord Almighty, you're going on 20 years. You did something right. Mm-hmm. You know, you had to do something right because the first is 3 years. If you can get past three and then five, you're pretty well sailing in a business. So we go, nope, she did all right. So I went in for the last couple of weeks and she says, you got to come in. You got to come in. I go, okay. So I wore my black and I walked around and talked. I said, don't pay me. This is too much fun. So she goes, you got to talk to all these people that know we're going to be closing. And it was so much fun. And even my husband came over and he was taking pictures of everything. And it was just great. It was just, and then all along we kept hearing, even when I had it, you need to do a book someday. You need to do a book someday.
See, I'm glad that you guys did. And I'm glad that you actually listened to what they said.
Yeah, well, we
you guys touched a lot of lives. I mean, I'm sure you know that. I'm sure you've been told that.
Well, it's a funny. Hindsight shows you an awful lot, too. It's like we run into people constantly. And, of course, all the book signings we've done and appearances we've done with the book. But this, even at, you know, Bernadette probably gets out more than I do with her husband. But even at other restaurants, she'll run into people and go, Nothing like it.
I can be just in a store somewhere and they'll go, we just miss you. We just miss Dufour so much. And then they'll say, well, we go to Lincoln Square. And I go, that's okay. We go there. I'm good. You know, I'm good with it. It's fine. You know, and so they go, but it's not Dufour's. And I go, well, here's what you do. You go in and you say, I want the French toast. And then you get the French toast and you go, it's okay, but it's just not Dufour's. Now, you can do that for us.
You better erase that one.
No. I'm older. I have no filters.
Now, where I worked on a Sunday, they prided themselves on doing a really good Eggs Benedict. So I need the insider scoop from you two. Yeah. What is your best Sunday brunch food that you guys cooked or one that you look for when you guys go out for Sunday breakfast? Was there one? Maria, any question for you is just met with a look of, hey, I didn't agree to do this podcast at all. My sister roped me into it, and now there's some disc jockey asked me some awkward question about eggs. God, I wish I was somewhere else. Isn't that what you're thinking right now?
Well, kind of, Jay, yes. After I've had. Give me another coffee, will you?
Yeah,
no.
Need some steam.
I have a hard time going out to restaurants because I'm so picky.
Yeah, we say we're foodies.
No, but that's kind of cool though that you've got that level of discernment.
But when I eat, when I go out for breakfast, and this is always my usual because it's usually the simplest thing to order, and they can't mess it up. Is two eggs over easy and a sausage patty and toast.
So something straightforward.
Okay, so you didn't have the same customers I did that sent those eggs back if they were not just right, where did you?
Well, now, over easy when you're cooking a lot of eggs is not easy.
Well, your question was, what do we eat when we go out for brunch,
well, but
right?
What was the one thing at DeForest where you guys, like you said, I mean, like you guys kind of mentioned like the French toast obviously touched some people. So did you guys have two or three of this long list of breakfast items that people said,
constantly,
oh yeah, this is the best?
The banana Foster waffles that I only did on, well, I tried to only do them on Sunday because I wanted to make it. Sunday was always special in our home growing up. So I wanted to kind of do that at the restaurant. The only time you can get it is on Sunday. But it just, you know, people were like, can I get that today? And so we started doing it every day. But we made our own bananas Fosters, and they would want it on those Belgian waffles that we did. And that was always a huge one. The French toast, always a popular one. And that was just all of our leftover sweetbreads and
there's a story in here about it.
Leftover and we saved in our French toast bucket.
No, that's very cool. Mm-hmm.
And the texture, I mean the
batter.
The batter that we made was our own, mm-hmm. and that's probably what made it good. But it was all the textures and taste of the. And then they could get the sauce, that, you know, all those different sauces that we made. So that
well,
was a big one.
And then you mentioned the waffle thing, and I thought it was always interesting in the restaurant world because sometimes in the restaurant world, everything's so gigantic. It's like you're not making things subtly enough. It's you know, certainly the griddle, and not to pick on Denny's, but the griddle at Denny's, there's no subtlety there, folks. You know what I mean? It's like you're not going to get an over easy egg. You're just lucky to get eggs. Shut up. Here's your eggs.
But, exactly.
But there's something about restaurant-style waffle makers that can't be beat. You know, it's mm-hmm. that it's just big enough to be big and, you know, and the batter and the way it cooks and everything. And so you're right.
Yeah.
You guys can make Belgian waffles that you'll never be able to make at your house.
Right. And so. And the sauces were it was with the, you know, the icing on the cake, per se, you know, because it was just those.
Because you made them.
We made them from scratch. You know, all the sauces we have, like I did the cranberry walnut sauce they could pick from. They could pick the banana Foster sauce. We had, I had three of them. I can't remember what they were.
Was it blueberry?
But yes, we did offer three types of Eggs Benedict, though, on Sunday. And then, of course, those went on every day after about a month. We just did them every day.
Those customers were so demanding. You just had to change your path.
Which I didn't think would sell was the smoked salmon Benedict.
Interesting.
And it really sold. And then that led to lox and bagels. We'd have some people come in and I go, well, why not? We got the stuff. We got bagels. We got cream cheese. We got onion. We got
right.
So, you know, this is how it goes.
And
my staff sometimes would get a little frustrated because I was always about the customer. You know, if someone's good, it's not on the menu, but can I have it? I go, yes.
Unlike me.
You'd figure out a way to make it, yeah.
Can I have a BLT? And the cook, Brian, poor Brian, he'd go, why do you say yes to a BLT? I go, because we have toast, we have bacon, we got it all right.
Sure, yeah.
It's all on the table.
Heck, you know?
Yeah, unlike me, in the very beginning, I didn't have that luxury of trying to change things. So I kind of got to be known as the soup Nazi or the sandwich Nazi. So one day, because when we did start, which was entirely different, and we found out, remember Reed Duffy?
Oh, yes.
The food critic.
Yeah, it's because that was pre-social media. You had
right.
You had to keep him happy.
Whatever you can get your name out there.
Howard Caldwell.
Oh, we had some names come in there, but Reed Duffy came in. And so anyway, I go, okay.
He was never an undercover
food
critic.
Hello, Reed
Duffy. Like, yeah. He had an entourage and was as loud as a bullhorn. And he was the one guy I got to work with. I worked at Channel 6. And he was an absolute joy because I was the lowest guy on the totem pole. I was just the voice of Channel 6. These guys were all on camera. they were almost like, hey, kid, bring my bags around, you know.
Give me some coffee. Yeah, give me coffee.
But Reed was one of those guys, come over here, and he'd tell me some story. And it was like, some of those stories were like, was that even legal? But you just we'd laugh so hard, he wouldn't care, you know. Well, so Reed comes in. And
so he comes in, but the point was, is that one, that's how you did. Like Maria said, pre-meet social. I mean, you had to spend money on ads. You had to do all this. But now I forgot my story. I was going to say about old age, not good.
Well, the information's all in there. It just, you know, it takes a while to reactivate it.
Yeah, it does.
So Reed comes in.
Bring another coffee.
And you're.
Oh, I know what it was.
So did you guys make sure that he got the perfect food and everything?
He was not as discreet as the Board of Health. I mean, he walked in the door and you knew the Board of Health kind of came in, covered up their logos and then go, oh, God, they're here. But he had told me. And I believe he even wrote that in his review. I do believe that's where it was stated. He said that we were so unique because at that time, we did a weekly menu, a lunch menu. Every week, I changed that menu. And then every day was a different feature. And then Maria wanted to go. She decided to go more static. And she goes, well, you know, I think it's easier if I just say these are the special sandwiches we do, and then features, everyday features. But he said, you are the only restaurant that I know that does that. And then we started noticing later some of the big restaurants were actually starting to do that, do it today. And so he goes, this is very unique, which would help for your destination, you know, for people making you a destination.
Well, and I appreciate you guys going to that effort because, as you know, with chain restaurants, you're going to get, you know, even if they've got good food you like, it's going to be the same old, same old. In fact, I chuckle. There's a couple of places that I, unfortunately, can't quit going to. And you go, this menu is the same as it was in 1986, which is both good and bad. So I think it's so cool that you guys adventuresomely tried to come up with new stuff all the time.
I think that's probably from Mom. We always said, I didn't have the training. Somebody just asked me again recently, well, where did you get your training? I go, hanging off Mom's apron. 10 kids, you're in the kitchen a lot with Mom. She was very creative. And like Maria had mentioned, Sundays were really big. It was always like brunch after church. Holidays, birthdays. Mom always made a big deal out of food. She's Italian and Dad was French. And so we always had that family thing. And Mom was creative. I used to say, when we did take our lunch, because more times than not, we walked home. We were like 7 blocks. And Mom was always home. But when we did take it, I'd have people. I don't know about Maria. I'm being a little older than I am from her.
Yes, thank you for mentioning that.
Do you think Bernadette learned some bad things from you?
Absolutely.
Your attorney told you not to answer the question, but this podcast is all about entertainment.
Last night.
It's coming to Odelli.
I'll tell you about that later. It was weird.
Yeah, we'll analyze that. Okay, we'll analyze that one, my dear. We'll talk about that one. So anyway, she'd fix really neat lunches. And like I said, I don't know if the younger ones got into that niche with Mom. But I would go, when we sit there in the cafeteria at Lourdes, someone would say, oh, can I trade you? I go, no way. And they have peanut butter every day. I go, no, because Mom always had this variety of things that were different.
Right.
You sure? I go, absolutely. You can have that budding chip beef stuff, you know. So I always felt like that's where I felt comfortable with. She, you know, obviously got training, but we all talk about that in our family. We're kind of foodies, all of us.
That's good.
All of us cook well. Snobs. All of us bake. Yeah, sometimes we're snobs.
Now, speaking of being snobs, I used to work with a really demanding chef, so he'd hammer you till you got techniques right or certain things right, but he'd always go, everybody that works in my restaurant has to make a great club sandwich. So my question is, can you make a great club sandwich?
Oh, of course.
That's easy.
Blindfolded.
See? But don't say that it's easy. No, I say a great club sandwich isn't easy.
Yeah, so we had on our menu, so when Bernadette mentions that I stopped doing the changing that menu every week and I picked the best sandwiches that I thought that people constantly asked for, and I said, you're going to get them all the time now. But there were a couple that we made from the kitchen, and one was a featured sandwich to start with. And since we've already used some cuss words, we called it the Big Ass Sandwich.
Ah. Mm-hmm.
Had a Z in it though,
because
didn't it?
Because we made it was a
for
triple,
marketing purposes.
It was a triple decker club, three slices of bread, ham, turkey, bacon, Swiss, American, lettuce, tomato, the whole nine yards on this thing, and it would come out. And the girls that were picking it up one day, Stacy, she says, "That is one big sandwich."
That's funny.
And so guess what went on the menu? The big AZZ, and the little ladies come in, they go, "I want the big, you know."
Oh, that's funny. No, that's great. So, see, you guys took the club sandwich and took it.
We took it up a notch.
You guys took it in a.
I want the big, you know, this one right here.
It was like a club sandwich on steroids. That's good.
Yes.
Okay, so the book is called DeFours and Irvington Blessings in Our Soup, mm-hmm. Memoirs and Recipes. And Bernadette and Maria are the authors. And how do we get this book? Because after hearing this podcast, you know, we're maybe up to 10 people. are going to want to order this book.
I think we have 9 books left.
There you go. That'd be perfect.
Was that 9 books or 9?
Amazon.com.
Good.
IBJBP.com. That was our publisher.
Indianapolis Business Journal.
Indianapolis Business Journal. Bookpublishing.com. We have it locally. We have it Indiana Reads on Mass Avenue.
Irvington.
We have it Irvington Vinyl and Records.
Yes,
vinyl. Records.
And Indie Reads is a great bookstore. I'm so glad that you guys are there.
Yeah, and they were real, they complimented us very nicely on the book. They had told Maria, she was doing the footwork down there for me, and she said they said they've not seen such a great book come out as ours.
Oh, good.
A lot of people, I don't know if they thought it was the pictures, and I don't know if they thought it was going to be spiraled or something when people heard we were doing it, but... a bookstore in Cumberland.
So Bonna Thompson Center, which is also local, they sell books over there. In fact, Steve
Barnett,
but I think Steve Schmidt, who's over there as well, is an author. And so they have his books, but then they bought some of ours, and they're selling them over there as well.
Good.
So.
And you can go to Blessings and Our Soup
at gmail.com,
and we handle those directly, so it's a little less money because shipping and all that, but... Yeah, so they can go right to that. But, yeah, Amazon's the big one. IBJ's the next. Or they can shop locally.
Good. Well, thank you guys for writing the book. And
thanks.
This is part of the publicity tour, right? You got to answer a bunch of
questions. We have to get
questions.
A flight real soon.
Really?
We're taking a flight. Oh, wait, I don't know where we're going.
Sure.
Well, I tell you.
It makes it sound impressive, doesn't it?
I sent Oprah a book, and I sent one to the editor at the New York Times, and the joke on the back of the book, open that up so you can read it, because the joke in the back is that it says what?
It says, "Hey, Maria, do you want to write a book?" Maria, "No." "Yeah, but our memoirs and recipes from the restaurant?" "No." "Me, customers say it could hit the New York Times bestseller list." Maria, "Wait.
What?"
Plus, if you, like you said, if you get a chance to hang out with Oprah, and if
we have to convert this to Weight Watchers.
I don't think she does books anymore, but I found an address, and I think it's hers, and I mailed it, and I said, what the hell? It's, it's $4.
Beep, beep, beep. That's 3 strikes. You never heard me say hell on this podcast.
Well,
Well, I'm glad you guys wrote this book, and I'm glad you guys have been a part of Irvington for as long as you have.
Yeah.
And thank you for doing our podcast.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, Kevin. Thanks, Jay. Thanks, Kevin.
We'd like to thank artists and realtors.
Thanks, Mom. Thanks, Dad.
See, there you go.
Billy Bob.
Yep. Celebrating its 10th anniversary in Irvington. If you're considering buying or selling a home, let one of our artisans craft a great buying or selling experience for you. They're at 5610 East Washington Street between The Legend and Ossip. Some more shows on the way. We're going to be talking about when beer came to Irvington here pretty soon. And we have a great number of guests lined up, and we really do appreciate you supporting and listening to Firehouse Irvington. On behalf of the DeFore sisters and their book, this is Jay Baker saying thank you, Coal Yard Coffee. Thank you, Kevin Friedley. Be kind. We'll be right back.